Hun, are we out of those DeWolfs?
Those DeWolfs.
Those DeWolfs.
Those DeWolfs.
Oh, those DeWolfs.
Ow, those DeWolfs, they're just the best.
Those DeWolfs.
I mean, should we be those DeWolfs?
Batteries are included.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Those DeWolfs, episode 24, and we apologize for that hiatus. And what are we talking about this week?
Well, see, that's the problem. We came in our hiatus, we came up with two ideas. So this one's content curation.
Yeah, we're talking about the need for good curators in this world where we have content gone amok.
And how you have to understand to be a good producer of content, to have your content curated. And I think content curation is one of those ideas that it goes back to, it's what Google does. Google organizes the content and makes popular, relevant stuff findable. And they do it from a keyword search sort of idea, or what are the factors you bring to the table.
They have a huge algorithm working in their favor.
They have a huge algorithm, plus, you know.
And a little bit of voodoo.
Plus eight guys working from, you know, a trailer park in Texas who will, I like that link.
Yeah, maybe. But content curation is everywhere. It is in Pinterest. Yes, I mentioned that word. Every time that people retweet something, they are curating content. Every time you share a link on Facebook, you are curating content. If you blog about other people's work, you are curating content.
Yeah, you're making it popular. You're making it findable. It's like a library selecting books. Libraries, apart from the Library of Congress, don't have the expectation to carry all the books. They carry all the books that are relevant to that particular library. And a website behaves exactly the same way.
And the term, you know, curator is usually used in conjunction with art galleries and museums, where you are building a collection that fits together somehow. And for most people, individual content curation is about, you know, sharing things that are meaningful to you. And that's certainly the mindset behind Pinterest and why it has taken off the way it has. But I think you see it reflected basically since the beginning of the web. That's how that was the wonder of HTML, was being able to share content easily.
And well, and two, it's, you go into some web systems like a hard drive, and you'll be able to go to your hard drive, and you on some way or another be able to search and see all the files, great big tree of files and everything that's there. You'd be able to know what's there because of how the web works, where you're going out and you're phoning into different websites and their web pages and their sections. You don't know what you're going to get until you find it. It's like the whole street lamp and losing your car keys problem. You have to look under the street lamp. So when you're going out to the web, you're going out and you're looking at everything you can find, which is you're looking for links and links to links. And those are, that's sort of Google's game. But for Pinterest and company, what they're doing is they are looking for what, they're looking for people who find stuff and bring that back and build that connectivity out of nowhere, because there's no, you know, long gone are the days of the phone book of the internet, where you have a list of all the websites, which, of course, never covered all the websites.
No.
And Google has a bunch of websites, but you'd be probably surprised how many websites Google fails to carry.
Well, yeah, or that you would have to dig down through 20 or 30 screens in the O's of Google before you got to something that you could otherwise find in a different method through curation.
Exactly. And this whole discovery process is now at Pinterest and company and Boing Boing and Needorama and all the other sites that curate content. It's a human process. It's somebody likes it and thinks, an editor or some decision maker likes it and pushes it through.
Well, it's kind of like going back to DMOS.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the old way of doing the web searchability was local people who had niches who picked out what they saw as the best of the best.
Yeah.
Of course, DMOS has grown into quite a flawed beast of an existence.
Yeah, it's pretty good that DMOS and Demon are only one, are basically one character off, because there are so many horror stories I've read up from DMoz. When I, a while back, well, you know, they're a very trusted site, and in my SEO work, I'm trying to get trusted sites to link to my clients. And I looked at DMoz, and they're considered the granddaddy of trust. They've been around forever. They have a big hierarchy, a lot of links, and if you're in DMoz, that's a big feather in your cap. And I thought, well, okay, why is it a big feather in my cap? I discovered it's because it's so hard. It is labyrinthine. It's Byzantine. It's this sort of network made of kind of volunteer pirates, for want of a better phrase.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, well, because – and there's some great story from I'll dig it out and put it in the show notes. But it was amazing. This website that was fairly popular. They got up to, you know, we were talking page rank, the scale 1 to 10 for page rank. This one site got up to page rank 7 or 8. So they were definitely in the upper echelon of the web. And they were so popular that it looked like they were a cash cow. So the editor for that was responsible for the entry for that site for DMoz came to the owner of that website and said, yeah, I'm going to take your site out of DMoz unless you pay me $10,000. And
hence pirates.
Yeah, hence pirates. and he was serious. The guy thought he was joking, and he sort of, you know, parried with him, thinking, ha ha ha, this is kind of funny. And turned out, no, it wasn't. He refused, and very quickly he was taken out of DMoz, and he was banned. And when one of his friends who ran another modestly popular website also complained about the original person being banned, he also, in his entries, were banned from DMoz. So this is the – and when I tried to get into DMoz and add the entries, I found that I was banned.
Yeah. So it's like organized blackmail.
It is organized blackmail. And the problem is this site. If you look at it, Craigslist is being faulted for having kind of an old technology feel to it, and DMoz is an old version of Craigslist.
Oh, DMoz – well, it has not changed – I don't think, since about 1997?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they haven't woken up to the idea of tagging. And tagging is not a very revolutionary concept, but they haven't figured it out.
But, and there again, tagging is a form of curation. It mm-hmm. is, you are helping to categorize information and to build the knowledge base around something. It's, content curation is critical in with the vast amount of information that's out there. I just finished reading The Information Diet, which I'll include in the show notes. And he talks at a great length about the importance of content curation and finding trusted sources and finding varied sources so that you're not just constantly reaffirming beliefs that you already have, but that you're looking at all points of view for a certain subject or topic or whatever. And this is one way that curation can help with that. I've often done blog posts where I've examined a topic from several different angles and tried to include a variety of opinions. And those are usually the posts that I get, you know, decent amounts of comments and interaction with. Because people are thankful that I've been able to pull things together all in one place.
Yeah, that's really it. You need to be able to find stuff. And there's the information diet. You need content curation is really about only showing you what you want to find, as opposed to finding you everything that's possible on a topic.
Yeah, but I mean, curation is, I guess it's, you know, it's the wheat from the chaff as well. Because if you type in any search into Google, or, you know, your search engine of choice, whatever it may be, it's going to be now structured based on what you've searched before, based on where you are geographically, based on any number of things. So you may not find something that's relevant to what you are actually looking for, or it may be buried well down on the next, you know, 10 pages down. It's a real challenge for people to find what they need now.
But the good side of content curation, because it's a human process, whether it's Mechanical Turk or somebody in Pinterest or something else, is it means it can't be algorithmically gamed. Because that's the thing of search engines, and that's a whole game of SEO, is is trying to create the right mathematical situation where you can get a strong ranking for a website, not because of its quality or because of how much people like it. It's because of how people can, because of how popular something is. And not popular in a good way, apart from just the mathematics of how many websites are linking to it.
That's true. Yeah, content curation is not about numbers. It's about trust.
Yeah.
And if you go deeper into the best content curators out there, so if you find, you may find a blog that you love because they are constantly bringing forward things that match your interests or that match your whatever you're looking for, and it may not be that information diet questionable issue of reflecting your own ideas, but just things that pique your interest. Like for a long time, Boing Boing really worked for me, but it got really boring after a couple of years. And then we started to realize that they were curating things from other aggregators. And once we found those sources, we started going to those sources first.
And those sources had stuff that was more interesting and it didn't kind of go through this extra layer of filtering that took it away from where we really wanted to go. Like one of the Boing Boing sources, Nidorama, I like their stuff better than I like Boing Boing because Boing Boing will go off course for me and Nidorama strikes a better chord for me.
Yeah, and also if you're going to primary sources, if you're going to the original source of something, you're likely to get the unfiltered version. And this is one of the big issues with Pinterest right now, and Tumblr as well, and any other site where people just are sharing, is you get this photocopier effect where eventually, you know, you cut off the edge of who created the image or who first blogged about it. The thing that drives me absolutely crazy on Pinterest is clicking on an image to find the source and it just takes you to the Google image search. Well, that is absolutely no use because not only is there no credit given to the creator, I mean, that's fraught with its own image or its own issues. But if I want to find out more, I just can't. And I've had several instances where I've thought, you know, I wanted to repin something and reshare it, but I couldn't find out where it came from, so I just don't reshare it. Yeah. And when I find the serial resharers or serial pinners who do that and don't give the credit, I just unfollow them immediately.
And that's the thing with Pinterest. If you are going to pin stuff, you find something cool, and you've got that situation where you do see the repin of a repin or the photocopy effect going on. And you do want to share it out, you should go to that source, find it, and pin it from that original source.
Yeah, which I do try to do, but sometimes I can't find it. There was a good example today of a photo of a garden planted in a pallet. And I've seen lots of these where they've been vertical. So you plant the things and then you hang it or lean it against your wall. And this is for like small space gardening. But someone had done this horizontally with lettuce, and I thought, what a brilliant way to manage weeds and everything else. But the problem was that I still haven't been able to find the source of that image. I cannot find it anywhere. And you can, even when I type or, you know, copied and pasted it into the Google image search, which is the little trick to finding that original content, it couldn't find it either. So it's been completely obliterated through all of the many photocopies of photocopies. Which, you know, it reminds me of the office jokes that used to go around before there was email. That's how old I am. But they were photocopies of photocopies, and you would get these handed to you, and the outlines that were once in thick Sharpie are suddenly this sort of vaguely dotted line around a figure and, you know, some pithy humorous saying at the bottom. But yeah, I mean, I think some of the dangers of content creation is that you must find the original source. And if you don't, then you don't know what you're sharing. And it's kind of like kind of like buying bad drugs. You don't know what's in them, right? Like, you don't know how you can react. You don't know whether you're going to be sued. You don't know anything about it.
Well, and that, I think that's one thing we're going to see pretty soon. Like, Pinterest is, the honeymoon on Pinterest is almost over.
People have already been charged.
They have been charged. But I mean, the honeymoon on Pinterest is almost over in that people are going to pin something popular and you've seen somebody else pin it. And maybe you say, oh, well, I just saw that a minute ago. I'm going to check it out now. Click on a link that may have an actual dubious source. And then suddenly your machine's malware.
Exploits. Yeah, exploits. That could be really nasty. And I hadn't really thought about that. But thanks for that little bit of fear.
Yeah.
Actually, in this last week, speaking of exploits, and this is totally off topic, but with all the LulzSec stuff going on and people being taken down by the FBI and CIA, one of the major players changed his image on Twitter to a QR code that was very targeted to certain individuals and accessing it by mobile device, and it basically toasted their mobile device.
Nice.
So, you know, like, there are so many ways you can exploit things, and images have long been fraught with exploits. And so, yeah, you're right. Pinterest could be the doom and gloom of all.
Well, I found that when we were trying to do a redesign of our company website. I went off and tried to find the idea. Original exploit of this was ray guns and rocket ships as a concept. So I thought, let's go and find photos of ray guns and rocket ships and work from there. Kind of get things going. And I found one. It was locked up as clip art, and I kept searching thinking, you know, let's just keep looking around. And right next to the one locked up as clip art was one locked up and connected to a Ware site. So as soon as you click on it, suddenly my machine was inundated with malware.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as though I clicked on the website associated with the image. I was still in Google Images, but it had kind of run herd over top of the call for the image and done a redirect that then got me to where got me to the point where I was in Malware City.
Yeah.
And that's all Google's brains behind it, letting that happen. So Pinterest and some of its little faux pas, I mean, they've definitely got a lot growing to do. So the chance for those exploits is tremendous.
Yeah, that's true. But even outside of the world of images, there is, you always have to be careful what you're sharing. Because if you're sharing content that's been, again, the photocopier effect of copied and copied and copied. Wikipedia is often problematic because people will copy all of Wikipedia into their own pages, and then those will be copied and copied and copies of copies, and you never know which one was the originator of some little detail that got worked into Wikipedia or got worked into an article somewhere.
Or some important detail that got worked out
because somebody doubted it.
Because Wikipedia is an entirely voluntary army of people who make up their own mind about what is right or wrong, and often they're not going by facts. They're just going by...
There's a lot of passion.
Are they, as their own curators, popular, and therefore, because they're popular, they're unassailable as opposed to being right?
Yeah, but I guess where I'm going with this is there's been examples where something has been put out there as a, quote, fact, and then it's been copied and copied and copied to the point where some media person has picked it up and then publicized it just out of the way. Well, we see this all the time on Twitter with, you know, so-and-so has died, and they haven't actually died. And then their publicist has to go back and do, you know, crisis management and deal with it all that way. But that's a good example of how curation can go wrong really fast. Because any celebrity death just gets repeated ad infinitum. And, you know, oh, now it's trending. Well, good for you. You've announced someone's death that you never met in your life. I'm very happy for you.
Yeah, you can lament over somebody who is just so many digits and image files.
Yeah, but so it's easy for content curation to go wrong, and it's easy for content creation to go well. It's all in who is doing the curation, and it's again, it brings it back to being a very human function, and humans are not infallible. Hey, thanks for listening to Those DeWolves podcast.
You can find us on the web at www.thosedewolves.com. thosedewolves.com. I know it's grammatically incorrect, but whatever. Or facebook.com/thosedewolves.
Or you can find us on Twitter at thosedewolves. Or if you prefer to listen to us separately, we are at DeWolf001 for Mike, or at VicTriviaQueen for Cheryl. It's a long story. Thanks for listening. See you next week.